Nachayate putraka pratu antara madhanugaha. Visarga dana yostata pumso daivam hikaranam na choite putaka tu. Oh, hang on. Wrong page. Visarga dana yostata pumso daivam hikaranam. Never. Cha. Also. Ete. All these. Putraka. My dear son. Bratu. Of your brother. Antaraha. Killers. Dhanada. Of Kuvera. Anugaha. Followers. Visarga. Of birth. Adamayaho. Of death. Tata. My dear son. Pumsaha. Of a living entity. Daivam. The supreme. He. Certainly. Karanam. The cause. My dear son, those yakshas who are descendants of Kuvera are not actually the killers of your brother. The birth and death of every living entity are caused by the Supreme, who is certainly the cause of all causes. Text 25, Sa eva vishvam srijati, sa eva vatihanti cha. Atapi hi anahankaran najyate gunakarma bhi. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates this material world, maintains it, and annihilates it in due course of time. But because he is transcendental to such activities, he is never affected by ego in such action or by the modes of material nature. Purport: in this verse, the word anahankara means without ego. The conditioned soul has a false ego, and as a result of his karma, he gets different types of bodies in this material world. Sometimes he gets the body of a demigod, and he thinks that body to be his identity. Similarly, when he gets the body of a dog, he identifies himself with that body. But for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no such distinction between the body and the soul. Bhagavad Gita, therefore, certifies that anyone who thinks of Krishna as an ordinary human being is without knowledge of his transcendental nature and is a great fool. The Lord says, Na mam karmani limpanti. He is not affected by anything he does because he is never contaminated by the material modes of nature. That we have a material body proves that we are infected by the three material modes of nature. The Lord says to Arjuna, you and I had many, many births previously, but I remember everything whereas you do not. That is the difference between the living entity or conditioned soul and the supreme soul. The super soul, the supreme personality of Godhead, has no material body. He is not affected by any work he executes. There are many Mayavadi philosophers who consider that Krishna's body is the effect of a concentration of the material mode of goodness, and they distinguish Krishna's soul from Krishna's body. The real situation, however, is that the body of the conditioned soul, even if he has a large accumulation of material goodness, is material, whereas Krishna's body is never material, it is transcendental. Krishna has no false ego, for he does not identify himself with the false and temporary body. His body is always eternal. He descends to this world in his own original spiritual body. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita as Param Bhavam. The words Param Bhavam and Divyam are especially significant in understanding Krishna's personality. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhuktale Swayam Rupakada Mahayam Dadati Svapidantikam Mokam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Garim Yakripa tamaham bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, three things. Three things that Krishna does and mentioned here in this verse. Sa eva vishvam srijati. What does that mean? Sa eva vishvam. What's vishva? Vishvam. Vishva, the universe, yeah. Like we have Vishvatma, right? Vishvatma, Prabhu, Vishvatma Das. He's the, so Vishvatma means the soul of the Vishva, right? So here we've got Vishvam Srijati. What does Srijati mean? Creates, yes. Then avati, avati. We don't hear this word very often. Eva avati. So we've got sa. What does sa mean? He who? The Lord. Yeah. He, eva avati. So what comes after, if Srijati is creation, what comes after creation? Maintenance, right? Maintenance. Avati. Then hanti. Hanti. What does that mean? Annihilation. Yeah. Hanta means to kill. Right? or to finish off. Say finish off. So there's three things that the Lord does to the creation. He manifests it, out it comes. He maintains it for some time, and then he withdraws it. The example of a spider is given. Prabhupada gives the example of a spider. Bhagavatam probably gives the example. Sometimes spiders will take an hour to make, you know, they'll hop out and make a line, then make another line, and then eventually they'll fill in a whole big web from nothing. Right? And you can see that, you can see it at night, but then come back in the morning and it's all gone. So the spider's able to put it out, and then he draws it back in again. Right? So just as a spider manifests a web, apparently from nothing, and then withdraws it, so similarly also, Krishna manifests as Sukadeva was mentioning yesterday, not just one universe, but millions and millions, more than we can count. What? You know, when Vasudeva Datta was talking to Lord, was asking Lord Chaitanya, he was a very compassionate devotee, so he said, what did he say? He said, let all of the sinful reactions of all of the living entities in the universe, let me take them. Let me take those reactions and send everybody back home, back to Godhead. Is that right? Yep. And what was Lord Chaitanya's response? Yeah, he was making a comment about how the if a mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds is lost, who worries? Who cares? Huh? So for us, maintaining and manifesting a universe is inconceivable. But what can we do? What with our with the potencies that we have, what are we able to create? When you think about it, what are we able to create? A new dining hall. Well, stick around. It might be a while. Let's finish off the Didi kitchen first. That's proving to be a struggle. Right? What are we with our body? Just think about it. What do we usually create with our body? Offspring. Yeah. More often, it's much more insignificant than that. Right? When you think about it, what do we produce? You know, if we compare ourselves with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's able to manifest from his body millions and millions and millions and millions of universes, all with such intricate arrangements of planets and stars and moons, and on the planets, different continents, and on the continents, various countries and lots of living entities, and you know, so many species of life. Just amazing when you think about what is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and what we're able to create. The point that's being made here, if we compare the activities of the Supreme Personality with the activities of ourselves, then we find that there's a huge difference. Krishna is in charge of the creation of not only all of the Vishvam or Vishva, all of the universes, but he's in charge of the creation of everything and everyone, whether that's a big universe or it's just an insignificant little germ. What to speak of us? Right? He's the one who's in charge of creating and maintaining and then destroying, ultimately, right, uncountable living entities. Right? This is just amazing when you think about it, what he's in charge of and what he controls and what ultimately he destroys. Right? Even the destruction of the creation that's been maintained for such a long period of time is under the jurisdiction of Krishna. And there's not one of us that isn't under that control. Not one of us. So there's uncountable, innumerable, unlimited. It's inconceivable the number of living entities that are born, maintained, and then destroyed. Right? Now, the point here is that he's in charge of everyone and everything. Yet, despite the fact that he's the destroyer of everything, right, which is what Swayambhuva Manu is pointing out to Dhruva Maharaj, that the death of his brother was ultimately under the control and therefore sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? And whilst he was justified to, say, punish the yakshas who had killed his brother, still behind that killing of what was his brother's name? Uttama. Behind the killing of Uttama was the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? And when the Supreme Personality of Godhead arranges the killing of all of us, ultimately we're all going to be killed. Right? Anybody here expecting to live forever? We all think we're going to live forever. Even though we know we're not, we still think we are. We can see by our behaviour. But that sanction, that control, if you like, in the Bhagavad Gita, what's that verse? He's the upadrashta, the overseer. Upadrashta anumanta cha bhakta bharta maheshvaraha, right? He's the supreme controller. He's the supreme controller. He's the overseer and the permitter. If something happens, it's ultimately being sanctioned by God. And what can you do about it? And he's killing so many people. So it's kind of a challenge to Dhruva Maharaj. What are you going to do about that? Right? Going to take Krishna on. Hey, you're killing so many people, you deserve to be punished. Right? And sometimes people do that. You know, sometimes people face a calamity And then they blame God. Right? Which is right. In one sense, right? God's in charge and he makes the arrangements, and sometimes you're successful and sometimes you're embarrassed. Right? Sometimes things don't turn out the way that you would like them to. Right? Many times. Very often, actually. And so, you know, one of the symptoms of a devotee is that they recognize that ultimately Krishna's in charge and they surrender to whatever Krishna, whatever arrangement Krishna makes. Because it's just there's just some details in life or some experiences that we have that are just beyond our control, beyond our knowledge even, what's happening. And we just have to accept the circumstances as being Krishna's arrangement. Even though it appears that somebody may be the agent of our karma. Just like here, the yakshas appear to be the agents of Uttama's karma. And so therefore, and because it was unjust, therefore they deserve to be punished. Right? But of course, Dhruva Maharaj has overstepped his authority or his position as a maintainer of the law and order within the creation. And so sometimes if a person has performed a crime, killed somebody or whatever, they get punished. There's a punishment meted out for them. That's also part of Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's plan. It's the responsibility of the Kshatriyas to see to it that the dharma or religious principles are adhered to by the citizens. So that was his responsibility, but he's kind of overstepped he's over-exercised that responsibility. And so now Swayambhuva Maharaj is pointing out to him some of the salient points that need to be understood in being a maintainer of the law and order within the creation. So the killing of Uttama was ultimately sanctioned and arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that has to be accepted as being, that has to be accepted as the reality. And so at some point, one has to accept that the finality, one has to be realistic and fatalistic. You have to accept your fate, right? Sometimes we have to accept our fate, although that hurts. That may not be very palatable for us. And appreciate that Krishna's in control. And he's the one who's in charge of basically everything. And that he may act to punish and to chasten or chastise others, but he doesn't get any reactions for doing that. Right? Doesn't get any reactions. He can't be punished. Because ultimately it's his plan. It was interesting, Bhujan Prabhu mentioned this the other day in class, that Arjuna didn't want to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. And he cited four or five reasons why the battle of Kurukshetra should not take place, right? And they're all valid arguments when you think about it. And in fact, they did come about, right? Kali Yuga was just around the corner. And so that's kind of a struggle to assimilate, to reconcile. Why is it that Krishna allowed the battle of Kurukshetra to be the precipitation of the breakdown of family traditions, right, for example, right? Why did Krishna allow that? And of course, in the greater, having a greater perspective on things, we can see it was Kali Yuga was coming, right? And then ultimately, Kali Yuga is Krishna's arrangement, the whole apparatus of the material creation, starting with Satya Yuga, winds down, Prabhupada gives the example, like a clock. And so the qualities of people degrade. And eventually in Kali Yuga, people basically behaving like animals. Right? So why does that happen? Why does Krishna allow that? And of course, we understand Krishna allows that because he's fulfilling the desires of all of the living entities, and ultimately that winding down will gradually bring us to the end of Kali Yuga, and then the universal affairs will be reconstructed in such a way so Satya Yuga can start again, and it all goes on in a cycle. And this is Krishna's arrangement, this is Krishna's plan to facilitate the desires of the living entities and also to facilitate their liberation or their going back home, back to Godhead, ultimately. Right? So, seeing Krishna's hand behind everything, working for our purification, sometimes it's not easy to see how that's happening. And it's not easy to see Krishna's purpose. The battle of Kurukshetra happened because Krishna wanted it. It was an introduction, if you like, or a precursor to the beginning of Kali Yuga. So when Krishna takes on these functions, Srijati, Avati, Hanti, right, he's not affected by the performance of these activities. Where if we were to go around, you know, killing people, it's Krishna's arrangement. You know, we'll get reactions for that. We'll get reactions for everything that we do. And there's another point here that's made. When Krishna takes on these forms, he doesn't identify with them. Whereas when we take on a form, we identify fully with it. Right? And of course, there's a difference between our form and a form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His form is Satchit Ananda. It is fully spiritual. And when he appears, all of his activities are performed under the influence of the Antaranga Shakti, under the influence of the Leela Shakti. Yogamaya. Yeah. Whereas our activities are performed under the influence of the Mahamaya. Krishna is free to act, just like he mentions. I think even Prabhupada quotes this verse here. Namam karmani limpanti. Right? Krishna says, I don't accept the reactions of anybody. Right? Whereas when we perform our activities, unless it's pure devotional service, we identify with the body and we get the reactions from the performance of those activities. He is not affected by anything he does because he is never contaminated by the material modes of nature. Whereas, and Prabhupada said, the fact that we've got a material body means that we're influenced by the modes of material nature. So, one has to learn to see the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. And one has to appreciate that transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is it? Janma Karma. Janma Karma. Chame Divyam. Yeah. My birth and activities are Divyam. Transcendental. Right? But our birth and activities are Ajnana, right? Ignorance. His activities are transcendental. Our activities, at least, unless and until we get the association of the devotees and get an opportunity to perform devotional service, right? Then our activities are material. And isn't it interesting here? Dhruva Maharaj is actually a very, very elevated and great devotee. Yet, in the performance of his devotional service, he was pulled down. Right? Of course, by the association of Swayambhuva Manu and the other sadhu, saintly persons, he came to his senses. We know that the activities of a devotee engaged in devotional service are transcendental. Just as Krishna's activities are transcendental, so similarly also a devotee's activities when they're engaged in devotional service are also transcendental. But one has to be careful as a devotee. The material energy has the pulling down shakti, right? It's got the avaranatmika shakti and the that's a hard word to describe. The pulling down potency. Avaranatmika is the covering potency that generally everybody's covered by which they think I am an Australian, I am an Indian, I'm a German, whatever. Right? But we, by Krishna's grace and by Srila Prabhupada's mercy and the mercy of the devotees, we engaged in devotional service can come to the understanding that I'm not the body, right? That I'm transcendental to the modes of material nature. But we have to be vigilant. Even here, Dhruva Maharaj is a very exalted devotee, but he was somehow or another influenced, right, by that pulling down shakti, so that he was identifying with his identity as Dhruva Maharaj, the identity of his brother as Uttama, so somewhat on the bodily concept of life. Right? Even we see Arjuna. And Prabhupada says, Arjuna was in the gross bodily concept of life. Right? Well, you'll find Prabhupada says that. Yet in other places he says he's an eternal associate of Krishna. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? He's an eternal associate of Krishna in a gross bodily concept of life. So what's going on here? But of course, to facilitate Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna acts as the exemplar, as the archetypal, you know, spirit soul, conditioned spirit soul. So we shouldn't think that he's not a devotee, not an eternal associate. He's just, yeah, acting as a student, yeah, as a disciple, actually, yeah. Got it? Now instruct me. So, we can learn from this example of Dhruva Maharaj how one has to be careful we've taken on a battle, Prabhupada says. We're fighting a war against Maya. And Maya will always be pulling us down. And so it is not unusual that a devotee is affected by the material energy. And sometimes, and not sometimes, but ultimately that's also under Krishna's direction. We do have to teach these fellows some manners sometimes. Just as we need to be taught, they also need to be taught. And you know, the kids know where the center of attention is. Huh? And they like to be looked at. They like to be the center of attention. You know, I often tell it's a good story. You've got to keep your eye on the kids, right? Because they know that this over here is where the, you know, where the attention is, where the focus is. One time there was a younger than these guys, like about 2-3 years old, young boy, and I was giving a Sunday feast lecture, right? And this little kid came over and he was standing, you know, around about here. And then he just leaned over and pulled my nose. I tell people, you've got to keep an eye on the kids because they're like your enemy if you're not careful. They want to get the attention. Huh? Not these boys. These boys, the older boys are well behaved. What? Am I? Yeah. Sitting very nicely, paying attention to everything that's going on, right? So, where were we? Yes, so devotees have to be careful, and we shouldn't be surprised. Sometimes a devotee will be influenced by the external energy. But that also is ultimately under the direction of Krishna and for their benefit, for everybody's benefit. Just like here, Dhruva Maharaj, we might be thinking, why is Dhruva Maharaj getting influenced by, you know, material influence? But ultimately, this example is here to teach. He's being taught a lesson. It's also there to teach us a lesson. When we're in difficult situations or difficult circumstances, that situation is ultimately arranged by Krishna for our benefit. Because that doesn't mean that we can just do whatever we like and say, oh, it's Krishna's arrangement. You know, there's a difference between the activities of, say, Arjuna or Dhruva Maharaj and our activities. But at the same time, there are principles that we can draw from these examples for our benefit in understanding how one is tested and challenged and how ultimately that's for our long-term benefit in Krishna consciousness. And that one needs to stick strictly to the process of bhakti in order to maintain oneself on that platform of what is it? Divyam, or transcendental activities that are free from reactions. Right? When we're performing activities on a material platform, then we get reactions for those activities. Whereas if we're performing activities on the transcendental, on the spiritual platform, that's akarma, free from material reactions. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Mahatmaji.
And the Prabhupada, you said you had five causes for not fighting.
Five reasons, five arguments. Is it five arguments?
Yeah, five.
Sinful reactions for killing others. Loss of enjoyment. Right? What's that?
Compassion.
Right, okay, yeah, compassion. Breaking religious principles by destroying the family tradition. What else was there? I mentioned enjoyment.
Indecision.
Indecision.
And fighting with the guru.
Well, that's basically dharma, I think, you know. Contradicting dharma. Indecision, but that's not really a... That was just a feature of his character, not necessarily an argument for not fighting. He was just confused. Right? So maybe only four reasons he gave.
Mukunda Datta.
Mukunda Datta. I don't know anything about Mukunda Datta. And who else? There's somebody else as well. Huh?
Sridhar Pandit.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know anything. So you'll have to go and look it up. Yeah, I'm not strong on... Sometimes, if I know something, but... Mukunda Datta. I can't remember. It is the disappearance day of Mukunda Datta, and who else was it?
Sridhar Pandit.
Kolavecha Sridhar. A very humble devotee.
Mm-hmm.
He used to spend 50% of his income, which wasn't very much. He was a banana leaf seller in Bengal, where banana leaves, you could just go and cut them off the tree yourself. Lila Kirtan. Yes, yeah, we've heard. Lord Chaitanya used to tease Kolavecha Sridhar and steal his wares. Yeah. Well,
he made that person in something, but ultimately Krishna wants it to happen.
Well, no, Krishna doesn't want it to happen. That's not necessarily the case.
It's karma.
But yes, karma is involved, right? And so Krishna, in the form of the super soul, is directing the wanderings of all of the living entities. And in the process of doing that, he's fulfilling your desires, but he's also providing you with the reactions of your past activities, right? And so, you know, how he does that, you know, that's just beyond our ken. We cannot know. That's achincha. It's inconceivable. And so the vision of the devotee is in, ultimately, Uttama is getting the reactions of his past activities, right? And that's sanctioned by God. And ultimately, none of us have control over that, right? And he can't be punished for it, because he's facilitating everybody's actions and birth, maintenance, death. Right? That's all being ultimately orchestrated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Swayambhuva Manu is encouraging Dhruva Maharaj to take a view of the circumstances from a higher viewpoint, which is to see all of the actions of all of the living entities as being ultimately directed by the Supersoul, or in this case the Vishvatma, right? Vishvam Srijati Avati Hanti, right? The creation, the maintenance, and then ultimately the destruction of everything. And so then that then removes the vision of the yakshas killing his brother. Right? That's what he's saying. The yakshas killed my brother, therefore punish the yakshas. Which is fair enough. That was actually justified. But of course then he went on to kill 30,000 of them. And that's going too far. Right? Was it 30,000 something? A lot.
For one.
So, Swayambhuva Manu is encouraging him to see with the vision of really of to see beyond the immediate action and reactions that are taking place, but to see everything ultimately from the point of view that is being directed by superior authorities. And that those superior authorities, especially Krishna, is able to perfectly prescribe and fulfill that prescription, right? When you go to the doctor, he prescribes what you need, right? Then you go to the chemist and they fill the prescription, right? In Krishna's case, he's the doctor. He knows what you need and then he delivers it through his agents, right? The agents are the material energy, for example, and the other living entities, right? Our friends, or our children, or our parents, right? Did you ever get chastised by your mum and dad? Right? That's Krishna ultimately. So, the devotee is encouraged to see that with that vision. And also then he becomes detached. If you start seeing things from that perspective, then you don't get upset when something goes wrong. You realise, oh, that's Krishna. Oh. But you tolerate it, not react to it. If something happens to us, the tendency is to react immediately. But when one sees with that vision of everything being under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one doesn't react immediately to things. And one's reactions are tempered pretty much, or the parameters within which we work are what's given to us by a spiritual master. Right? And that's the impetus. The instructions of the spiritual master are the parameters within which a devotee works. And so therefore it's not a response to actions and reactions, but it's a response to the instruction of the spiritual master, which is basically Krishna's service. Right? Now, sometimes that may require reacting. If somebody comes and does something silly in a temple, right? What do we do? Oh, it's okay, Krishna's in control. No. If a child is behaving badly, what do we do? Come here. Outside. Some instruction. We give them some instructions. When you're in the temple room, you have to behave yourself. Is that right? You ever been told that? Hey? How many times? Three times. Only three times. You're a saint. You're a saint. Only three times that you can remember. Right? So, but that's again done under the instructions of the spiritual master. Because, you know, we as devotees, we're being trained to be devotees, basically. That's what we do. So there are appropriate reactions even to circumstances or situations, but they're ultimately governed by the instructions that are given to us by the spiritual master. Looks like they fixed this up okay. Huh? But don't lean on it. Does that make sense? Yes. It's, you know, we act, and we even may react to circumstances and situations, but not without consideration of the instructions of Krishna ultimately, and the spiritual master who's Krishna's representative. And so when we're acting in that way, then we're protected by the fact that those activities are not on the material platform, but they're actually on the spiritual platform. And that's why we have our guidelines are given by the guru, sadhu, and ultimately by the shastra. The spiritual master and the sadhus give basically the instructions of shastra. But the reason why we take them initially from the spiritual master and from the sadhus is because those instructions need to be applied according to kala, desha, patra, according to time, place and circumstance. And so therefore the application of those principles that we find within the shastra have to be understood in context and applied in context. Otherwise, you know, just a strict adherence to all the rules, and this is niyamagraha. And niyamagraha is, you know, too much attachment to the rules and regulations can actually be detrimental to one's devotional service because it's misapplied. Right? And just ignoring it, oh, we don't have to follow rules and regulations, that's also not good. So that's why we need to be, well, why we study these examples from the shastra, so we can learn how to apply the principles, time, place and circumstance, and why we, when we're not mature, or even when we are mature, a mature devotee still seeks advice from the sadhus and from the spiritual master on how to act in a particular circumstance. Because what might appear to be an obvious response may not be, because of the complexity of the circumstances that one finds oneself in. They get punished. Yeah.
How to understand, like, somebody is killing somebody, then, you know, this person is thinking, but Krishna has to give permission to do that also. But then this person who is killing is also punished. So that means it's his karma also.
They're all getting punished. Because they're all rascals. Right? And Krishna uses each of us to sort out ourselves. We're in the association, you know. The example that I often give is of a gem polishing machine, right? It's like a concrete mixer, and you've got all of these rough gems, right? So how do they make them? How are rough gems made into smooth stones? They get the shovel and they put them in the mixer, put water in, and then they just revolve them around. And then by bumping into each other, all of the rough edges get knocked off until eventually they're all smooth, shiny stones. So we get thrown into we get all thrown into ISKCON together, and then bump up against each other to get smoothed off. I mean, how come this person's here to give me a hard time? Well, you're here to give somebody else a hard time too, so don't worry about it. It's, you know, it's a give and take world. In that way, we become purified. And every day we get an opportunity. Then we go back and do it again. And then the next day we offer our obeisances for any of the mistakes that we made. So that way we're all in the same washing machine.
Same boat.
Same boat, yeah. But we've got Prabhupada as the... He's our... Srila Prabhupada is our... He's the captain of the boat. On that note,
today is also the appearance day of His Grace Anuradha Prabhu.
To your great misfortune.
I want to mention something from me. We happen to be in ISKCON Paris. We've taken darshan of ISKCON Paris for every day. And over there, there is a devotee, and in ISKCON Paris, it's still. It's been there for a long time, but they're trying to get more devotees, and they don't have a big congregation like us. So there was a devotee, there was a brahmachari, so when he said, you are very fortunate, it's called Melbourne, you have Anuradha Prabhu. And he's such a great sadhaka that's the reason why it's such a vibrating temple. And I was thinking, you know, because we are so used to having you here every day, it's because of the familiarity, we don't realize how much efforts and sacrifices we make to keep this temple going, but then he is in the other end of the world, and he's reminding us of your great sadhana, and how, because you're such a great sadhana, that's why you're able to keep the temple going. And I'm thinking, yes, that's true. Whenever you are here, you try to come to one night, you do have a big Swami program, and you're in heaven.
Well, I wish it were true. May I be blessed. Yes. Well, that's my hope. That's my great hope, that I can fulfill that observation.
I used to just buy
I remember that. Yes.
So thank you so much for being such a symbol of inspiration and for having such a wonderful temple with such great standards of deity worship that it's very inspiring. The deities are so important because you as a caretaker have looked after, you know, looked after so well that they reciprocate so nicely with all of us. And it just isn't able to feel how, and the congregation is just growing. It's just because you as a leader is inspiring all of us. And we hope and pray that you will have good health and long life and will continue to do this for many, many more years to come.
Thank you, Pretty. I appreciate your inquisitiveness. Inquisitiveness is a sign of a very sincere devotee because you inquired and then you took the instructions to heart, and now you're also a staunch devotee, and you've also received Prabhupada's mercy, because that's all I, if I'm anything, it's the mercy of the devotees and Prabhupada's blessings upon us all. So if we're anything, then we're Prabhupada's creeper, right? Yeah. Okay, enough said. I thought you were going to ask a question. If I'd known what you were. Okay. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.